Today I want to talk to you about the centerpiece. We have a centerpiece on the tables of our house, I think. You might have a centerpiece at your dining room table or your kitchen table. You probably do. It might change as the year goes by. You might start out with flowers, or you might get candles, a vase or something. But if we had to label something as the centerpiece of Christmas, what do you think it would be? Now, you think since we're in church, it must be Jesus. Yeah, I remember reading a story about a children's sermon in which a guy was talking to the kids and said, "All right, I want to ask you a question. What has a furry tail and jumps from branch to branch up in the tree?" And the kids looked at one another and said, "It sounds like a squirrel, but we're in church, so it must be Jesus." But let's think for just a second. If you really thought about it, what is probably the centerpiece when you think about Christmas? Christmas tree, right? Look at a picture of our Christmas tree. Not really. But yeah, you'd think it's probably the Christmas tree. You know, this is the thing that tells us that it's Christmas time at our house. You know, a lot of times, you don't just have the Christmas tree in your house in July. You know, I mean, now, I think Walter Matthau had it, and he had some old, those little stockings that you'd buy, you know, at the store that were filled with candy already prepackaged in The Odd Couple. And I love that. When he was being Oscar Madison, if you look in the corner, you see the old Christmas tree and the old stock. It's the middle of July. They're all playing cards and gambling. But most of us, though, we don't have the Christmas tree up. Maybe if you do, you have it in a room somewhere where nobody can see it, or in the garage. You know, it's already decorated and you keep it year round. But nevertheless, it's not in your house, and not all the time. I want to show you a picture here. You'll never guess who that handsome young man is there. That's me. Yeah. What time of year is it? Christmas time. How do you know? Don't say it's because there's a present over with a bow. Because we're in front of a Christmas tree, right? Yeah. That's Mom and Dad and me in front of our Christmas tree. I was about 3 years old. Maybe not quite, I don't know. But it's Christmas, of course, because the tree. Let's face it. We sing "Old Christmas Tree." We rock around the Christmas tree. Charlie Brown's was famous. Jason Robards owned the only house without one. And we're told that when we're coming home to have snow, mistletoe, and presents on or under the Christmas tree. We walk into a house and we see no tree or a pitiful one, and we immediately draw a conclusion about the people who are living in that house, don't we? We do. We think this home must not be very happy because they don't even have a Christmas tree. Or it's pretty sad the way it looks. You know, haven't y'all bought a new Christmas tree in the last 20 years? This one looks pretty much like green pipe cleaners. You know, it's pretty bad. They got better ones. And we think there's something wrong if there's no tree. How can you not have a tree at Christmas time? I remember one time when my dad was divorced a second time. We lived on Majolica Road, a little place in Salisbury, and it was just he and I that Christmas. And I remember going to his house, and there were three large presents for me, and he had no tree. And they were on the fireplace, because I guess that was the most Christmas-looking thing we had. But, I mean, it was just three presents on the fireplace. You know, I mean, it's there. And it just was so depressing. I mean, it was sad. I mean, you know, there's a 40-year-old man over there and the Lazy Boy, and there's me, and that's, you know. And after I opened the presents, it wasn't much better. I got to be honest with you. He really didn't know what he was doing when he went shopping that year either. It was really pretty lousy. But it was a sad day. And one reason it was sad, honestly, was because there's no decorations. There was no tree. It just didn't feel like Christmas, you know. I mean, think about your past. Think about the Christmas tree. Think about what happened and how Christmas was enjoyed at your house. I want to show you a picture of my mother opening a present. That was in Christmas of 1984. I'll tell you a little bit about the picture. My mother had been very sick, and she still had cancer, and we didn't know what would happen. And this was her last Christmas. She had seen a coat. It was a blue fox coat. And in 1984, it was $700. So it was a lot of money. And my mother and father were divorced, and they were not married to anyone at the time. And my dad came through because she was very sick. And he told me he found out about the blue fox coat that she saw. And she was just joking to me, "Oh, I saw what you can get me for Christmas, Mark." You know, and I said, "It's a blue fox coat." And I didn't have anything to do with it, but my dad came to see me the week before Christmas. He said, "I bought your mother the blue fox coat." And interestingly enough, yesterday, had my mother and father stayed married and she lived, they would have been married 50 years yesterday. As a matter of fact, let me tell you what's amazing. Carrie is the age that my mother was when they got married. So things change, don't they? But anyway, she's gasping because she's just opened the blue fox coat. And my dad was so proud that he did that, and I was so proud of my dad. Of course, he said it was from me, but it was from Dad. And I was so proud of that. I'm so proud of that picture now because in 11 months, my mother was dead, and we were standing, my father and I were standing at her grave, and I'll never forget what he said. We put a poinsettia on her grave, and he said, "That's all I can buy her this year." You can tell it's a Christmas picture, can't you? Why? Because there's a tree. The centerpiece of Christmas. A lot of things happen around the tree. I want to tell you about my mother a little bit. Interesting thing about Mom and Christmas, I never knew anybody to love Christmas more than my mother. Maybe my grandfather, he liked it a lot too, Harold. But let me tell you, first of all, the tree had to be real. And if you'll notice, that's a real tree. Every Christmas tree my mother ever had was real. She never had an artificial tree. It had to be real. It had to smell like Christmas because she felt like if you had a fake tree, it was a fake Christmas. And I want to tell you how we used to pick the perfect Christmas tree when I was a young boy. Salisbury in those days had about three places you could get a tree, a real tree. We had about three Christmas tree lots. Doesn't really matter where they were, but I'll tell you a couple. Around lunchtime, though, on the day we decided to get our Christmas tree, Mom and usually her mother and I would get started. And first of all, we'd go to a place called Rufty's Garden Shop. It's still there. It's on Innis Street. And we'd look at Rufty's Garden Shop, and it was usually the first stop because it was the closest to home. But let me tell you something. I don't think we ever bought a Christmas tree at Rufty's Garden Shop. It was just the first place you looked, you know. So we went to Rufty's, and we'd spend about 30 minutes walking through all the trees and looking through all the trees and asking questions about all the trees. Don't you have one that's, you know, all that stuff that mothers think about that you never think about. And I'm just, you know, ready to get home because I want to decorate it because I'm excited because it's Christmas time. Santa's coming. So we'd leave Rufty's Garden Shop, and then there was a little small place close to where one of the trains went over on Innis Street by the bridge, and we would go there. I don't know who owned it. It was probably really sketch nowadays, as they say, but we would go over there, and we'd walk through all those trees. And then there was one other tree lot, which was all the way on the other side of town, and it was where the Roses was. It's now a big Lowe's over there, right off the interstate. And there was a big lot there, and we'd walk through all those. Now, we would look through these trees, and we would not purchase one, but we'd have to ask them how much it, if they would hold one here or there, and they would say, "Yeah, we'll hold it. How late will you hold it?" So or so on. And then on the way back home, of course, we had to stop again at the one by the where the train went over, and then the last stop had to be at Rufty's again. We'd have to retrace and try to remember in our minds which trees we liked the most. Have you ever tried to remember what a Christmas tree looked like while looking at other Christmas trees? I mean, it's an impossibility, but my mother thought she could do it. And so we would get all the way home, and that's the way our afternoon would be until Dad got home. And then we would do it all again. We would start all over again, and finally we'd make the decision, we'd buy the tree, and of course Dad would give the annual, "I can't believe this is, you know, $25 or $30 or whatever, you know. And I like, you know, there's a cartoon we watch every year when Life with Louie used to come on. Louie Anderson used to do this thing, and there's just a segment where they go and buy a Christmas tree for $35, and the dad just raises all kind of cane, and they get it home, and he says, "For $35, that tree should dance," you know. And you don't want to buy the whole lot, you know. But anyhow, we would finally get the tree. Around 7 o'clock, we'd probably get home with the tree after Dad had just spent the whole day at work, and we've got the tree, we've put it in the trunk, they've tied it up, we get it home. Now, Dad would have to find the stand to put it in, right? You remember what that was like? Dad finding the stand, or you finding the stand, or the husband finding the stand, and it was one of those red-green metal, you know, and it's always got rosin already on it. It's dirty. You don't know where in the world it was. And this was quite a test for my father because we moved every year. So we didn't really know where it was. We'd start in the attic or in the storage shed, you know. And I remember we'd find ornaments. Mom would reach into a box and she'd think it was an ornament. And she'd say, "I don't know if that's an ornament or not. That might be a rat or something that's got in while we were moving. We'll wait till your father gets home. We'll let him look through that and see if that's an ornament." But anyhow, he would finally find the stand. And he'd take the stand outside. My father, to my knowledge, never owned a tool more than a screwdriver. So he would have to get in touch with my mother's dad, the father-in-law, and get a saw and bring it over. And we'd get the saw, and he would start working on that tree. You know, and you got to cut the bottom. You got to cut the limbs off. And see, my mother was terrible at judging size. She wanted a big tree. She wanted it to touch the ceiling. She wanted it to be full. But she couldn't really grasp how much it would, you know. I mean, it was kind of like Chevy Chase, you know. You cut it and it just goes everywhere. So Dad would spend a lot of time out there sawing. You know, in the meantime, Mom and I are getting the lights and getting all these great ornaments out. We just couldn't wait. And he's sawing and sawing. And it never failed. Once he would get the stand on the tree and finally cut off the little limbs at the bottom, he'd finally, you know, you got to cut the trunk straight across, right? Because it's got to absorb water, or it's going to get old and dry and all the needles are going to fall off of it. So Mom and I are moving the furniture, getting it arranged so Dad can bring it in the front door. I can see some of y'all. Y'all are remembering this as if it's your life, right? This is your life. And Dad's heaving because, like I said, it's wide at the bottom and the door, you know, there is no way that this is supposed to be done. You know, they don't design houses for Christmas trees. And he's pulling and he's yanking and he finally, you know, and he probably had to take it out two or three times each year because it wasn't right. And he'd get it back in and get it back and he'd drag it back in. And of course, he would set it in the stand finally. And we're all excited. We got the couch out of the way and you got to put it right in the front where your biggest window is because you want everyone to be able to see it when they drive by, right? And you want to light it and get it all decorated, and it's gorgeous, and you can't wait. You've only stepped on two or three little Christmas lights in the process of, you know, they've shattered under your feet, but you're all set, and you put it up in the tree, and you just can't wait to get it turned on. I'm hardly able to contain myself at this point. He gets it in the stand, puts it up, and, of course, it starts to do what? Right. And my mother, now I got to tell you something. We don't have any little children in here, do we? Okay, all right. There are two times when you need a wife to be very soothing to you. One is when you're putting the Christmas tree up. The other is when you are assembling toys as Santa Claus. Okay? My mother had a real bad habit. She was neither at neither time. My dad, bless his heart, and I love my mother, but she was not, it was always, "Richard, it's crooked. Richard, it's still crooked. Richard, it's crooked." You know, my mom was the kind of person that when we were Christmas shopping, would say, "Richard, circle the place one more time. Let's see if we can get a closer parking place." You know what I mean? Just kind of those little things where you just, you know, you're dealing with it, you know? I remember one time my dad told me many years later, he said, he was putting together something for me as Santa Claus, and Mom was angry about something. And all night, you know, just kept bringing up this topic, you know. And he said it just drove him crazy, you know, because he said, imagine putting together a little toy and the person beside of you nagging you about something that happened during the day. You know, he says, it's just 2 a.m, you know, and it's all you can stand. And you know the day, you got to get in bed because the next day, you know. And again, so, but anyhow, she'd say, "Richard, it's leaning. It's leaning. And the reason I give you all of this in front is because of what my dad did next. I remember very well as a young child. Because we had, like I said, all these decorations, all these lights out. My dad puts it up, and it's probably the third time he's tried to put it up, and she says, "Richard, it's leaning. I can't decorate it." And my dad took that Christmas tree, and he took the stand, and he went to the front door, and he heaved it with all he could. And he threw it out in the yard. I kid you not. And he said, "You want to decorate this tree? Go decorate it." Is it any wonder that they were only married 8 years while I was living? Some of you understand where I'm coming from. You have felt that way. You want to decorate it? Decorate it. But the truth is, eventually, everyone would calm down and the tree would go up, and every year it got decorated. We always had a beautiful tree. The smell was wonderful. It wasn't long before, after the tree was up, there'd be presents under the tree. It's getting closer, you know, to Christmas. And you see those presents, and it was getting more exciting. And I remember with my parents and myself, I remember just spending nights sitting by the tree, the centerpiece. There was no television because, you know what, we never used the living room except at Christmas because that was the front room, and there's usually, everybody has a den where the TV is or something, and that's where you gather or what have you. But there was a living room, and that's where the Christmas tree went. And the only time I remember really sitting in the living room was in December after we got the Christmas tree. We might have some music on, you know, but we would just look at the lights. You remember those days when you used to be able to just sit in the living room and look at the Christmas tree? We don't do that anymore. But we did. We used to sit there, the three of us, I remember, and we'd look at the Christmas tree and we'd tell stories about when Mom and Dad were younger and about other Christmases. And my dad was great. He would always say, "Boy, you're going to get something for Christmas this year that you're really going to like." Man, there's nothing worse than hearing that when you're, you know, 6 years old, man. You just can't wait. And he did that every year. You know, it's, "Oh, boy, I know something you're getting this year. Oh, boy." And you'd sit there and just the anticipation and the smell and the music, and you just had one another, and it was marvelous. And then when Christmas Day came, we had family that would come over and we would exchange presents, and we'd get them from under the tree. We were gathered around the tree. Most time, you know, people would come in and we'd all have to have seats around the tree as we opened these presents. Maybe we had muffins, or maybe we had breakfast that was being made in the kitchen, and then we'd bring it out, you know, and everybody ready to open presents. It was a celebration. Maybe you had it in the evening after you ate a meal, and the kids, it was all they could stand, you know. Finally, Grandma and Grandpa would come in, and everybody would sit down around the tree. What a glorious event. Around the tree, the centerpiece. It had beckoned us, and for a few weeks it altered our lives because it altered our home. But it wasn't always a wonderful experience. Like I said, that one time when Dad threw it out the front yard, that wasn't a great way to kick off the Christmas season. Captain Davis, who works for the Roane County Sheriff's Department, told me a story once. And we were joking. He said he was working on Christmas and I was working on Christmas. And he said, "You know," he said, "Mark, when I used to be on patrol," you'll probably appreciate this, Brandon. He said, "When I used to be on patrol," he said, "we always knew how the seriousness of the call by the condition of the Christmas tree." He said, "We'd get a call for a domestic disturbance," he said, "and we'd ride out there," and said, "and I could always assess the situation if another unit would be needed by the condition of the Christmas tree." He said, "When I get up and look in the house or get to the front door, if the tree was still standing and everything looked fine, then I could probably handle the call." He said, "If it was mashed a little in at the on the side, or some decorations were knocked off, might be a little more questionable. Maybe it had fallen over in the corner, it might be a little more dangerous." He said, "But if you got to the call and the tree was out in the front yard, go ahead and call for backup." So there were times around the tree that were emotional. There were times around the tree that, you know, you can remember that weren't always good. But I mentioned you have to keep a tree fresh, a real tree. Otherwise it gets dry and the needles fall off. Now, the truth be told, as wonderful as these experiences were, and as beautiful as our trees were, we never really had a perfect tree. Never really. There was always a little something wrong. You had to hide it. You know, remember how you'd say there's a little gap over here? You got to put that in the corner. You didn't decorate the back as much as you did the front because you didn't think anybody could see it from the street anyway. Right? But there was never a real perfect tree, as good as they smelled and as wonderful as our memories were. And they were, it was wonderful, these trees and these times. I remember there were some beautiful ornaments that we would put on the tree, very special to our family, some we made, some that were just old and passed down. And I remember I got some remarkable gifts under those trees. And we had some emotional moments around the tree, just like that one. Emotional. Would you look with me in Acts 5? Give you some background. This is after the resurrection, and Peter is taken, and some of the disciples taken before the Sanhedrin and the Jewish rulers, and they're questioning him about what he's been doing. He's been healing. He's been preaching in the name of Jesus. And they take him and he starts to talk about Jesus and about his life and about who he was. And that's the context of this as he's talking to the Jewish authorities. It says, Peter and the other apostles replied, "We must obey God rather than men. The God of our fathers raised Jesus from the dead, whom you had killed by hanging him on a tree." You see, there was another tree. And life flowed from the branches of this tree. In spite of its rugged form, hanging from its limbs was the finest and the most exquisite ornament ever that adorned a tree. The body of Christ, the Son of the living God. And on that tree, He gave His life for mine. And His tears and His blood stained the tree with the colors of Christmas. That red, that rich red. You know, it's amazing how when we think of Christmas colors, there's green, but there's always red. And that precious blood turned that other tree red, and there was an aroma there, a fragrance of the season, if you will, the fragrance of life, and probably the expensive perfume of the woman who anointed him with pure nard that filled the air. And in a sense, this is the perfect tree. It's the flawless symbol of Christmas. Shouldn't this tree be the centerpiece of all of our celebrations? I mean, this is the centerpiece of Christmas, but truly, isn't this the centerpiece of it all? Isn't that the centerpiece of everything in our lives? Shouldn't it be? For where else can all the people of the earth be drawn together in unity? The Christmas trees of my youth brought my family together. Shouldn't this tree beckon us more so? To bring not only our family, but our extended family, our friends, our co-workers, the people that we pass. Shouldn't this tree beckon us to bring them to the foot of this tree? For under it is the most wonderful gift ever given. I had some remarkable gifts under the tree. I would get very excited at Christmas time because I had pretty much had an idea of what I was going to get. And as marvelous as those gifts were, they pale in comparison to this gift. People are searching for the perfect tree. Searching for the perfect gift. Help them find them both. For when others find it, they'll find Jesus, arms open wide, ready to give them the ultimate gift of Christmas, Himself. I want to ask you, when you see that picture, when you think of the cross, does it alter your home like a Christmas tree alters it at Christmas time? When you see that picture, does it alter your life? We had to slide things out of the way. We had to make room to put the Christmas tree in the most pristine place of our house. When I see that, when I see the cross, when I think about Christ dying, does it cause me to move things and shuffle things and rearrange things in my life, in my house, with my family? Is it the centerpiece not only of my Christmas, but every day? Do I freely display what the cross means to me as freely as I display my Christmas tree? See, I wear my Christmas tie today. It's got Santa Clauses on it. We dress and we get all made up and I see little patches that say Jesus is the reason for the season and all that stuff. And that's glorious. That's wonderful. I got a tie that's got the nativity and I've got some other ties. You've seen me wear my little cross tie that Randy gave me and I like that a lot. And a lot of times people have given me ties and I'll wear them. And I'm proud of them. And when people say, hey, I like your tie, preacher. Or I even like it more when they say, I like your tie, magistrate. I like it a lot when they say that to me. Keeps on, we can't do much more of that. You know, I mean, that's something I can do. I told Crystal, if they ever make me stop wearing my Christian ties, I'm going to get a tie printed that said the state told me I couldn't wear Jesus or a tie. But nevertheless, we're quick to do those things. I said, we display that tree and we make it beautiful. Why? Not really so much for ourselves, sometimes for ourselves, but we want us to be able to keep up with the neighbors, you know. We want it, you know, everybody, it's funny, you go down our neighborhood and our neighbors have started decorating pretty good. We used to do pretty good and now the neighbors have gone and surpassed us and we might have to catch up, you know, because you go to your neighborhood and you see lights here, lights here, lights here, no lights, and you realize that's your house and you feel really bad about it. You think, man, we look kind of like we're not in touch, you know. And so what we do is we get them and we decorate and we want it to look flashy. We want it to look nice. We want our tree to look nice, everything. I want to ask you something. That's all superficial. That's all nonsense when it comes to the reality of faith. Because what really matters is if your life reveals that the cross has made a change that's so uncontainable, everyone can see it. Everyone in the neighborhood. Everyone that comes across. I mean, it's amazing to me how we see the tree. We say, oh, they got a beautiful tree. It's just amazing. Oh, yes, I wanted to put my tree up there where everybody could see it. I'm so proud of my tree. I want to ask you today, are you proud of the cross? Are you proud of what He did? Are you proud of what it means? Has it changed you? Has it altered your life? Has it made you make room? Have you had to slide things out of the way? Does it occupy the most important place? So obvious. So all who pass by might notice it. The cross is beautiful to those who are being saved, but it is something that stirs emotions. There are times when it convicts us. And like my father, we heave it out of our lives. We think about how much we fall short. We think about the fact that we're convicted of sin and that we're not perfect, and that we don't have it all together, and that we have sin in our life, and there needs to be a change in our life, and we're not where we ought to be spiritually. And we look at the cross, and we think about all He did, and we feel really bad about that, and we say, but right now I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to make a change. I don't want to ask for salvation. I don't want to ask for cleansing. I don't want to be sanctified. I don't want to think about serving the Lord. I just want to serve me, and we heave it away. There are also times when our shame creates a conflict within us and we have to journey outward again. And we have to lift it up and put it on our shoulders and we have to bring it back into the center of our life. Does the message of the cross live within you? Or has it become dry? Has it been a while since you looked realistically at your soul and recognized that you have been blocking the life-giving blood of redemption to really be soaked up in your lifestyle? Like the roots of the tree that are severed, we still have to keep getting that fresh water into the Christmas tree to keep it fresh. And you, has it been a long time since you have asked the Holy Spirit to bring a resurgent taste of fresh water and infilling? Has it been a long time? Is your spiritual faith a little dry? Have the needles fallen off, so to speak? Things gotten out of hand? Things falling apart spiritually for you? Dry. It's time we keep it fresh. It's time we decide to keep it fresh by tending it through the reading of His Word and giving of ourselves again, serving Him, loving each other, making a fresh commitment, recommitting our lives to Him. If we were truly honest with ourselves, I want you to look at the picture of Mom again. Can you put that back there? The one where she, yeah. My mother was absolutely shocked when she opened that present and saw that blue fox coat. She couldn't believe. First of all, she knew I couldn't have got it. She couldn't believe that someone cared enough about her to do that, especially her first husband that she was divorced from for, goodness knows, I don't know, 10 years by then? Maybe not quite. She looked at that and she saw that gift and she just grabbed her mouth because she could not believe she was looking at such a present. Now show me the picture of Jesus again. When you see that and you think that He did that for you and offered you eternal life, salvation, if we were honest, we would all look just like my mother, because we don't deserve it. We can't believe how much He paid for that present. Just can't believe it. I'm not worthy. What am I but just a vapor? What is my life but just a few years? Mom's was a few months. She knew it wouldn't be long. And if we get 70 or 80, or bless his heart like Charles McDowell, get into our 90s, what is that compared to eternity and the price He paid for me? Would you stand with me?